listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Wayne Fritz will be with us shortly. And so we're just going to hit the ground running today. We have a special guest with us. As always, we get coaches, obviously, had a Concierge Coaches Show. We have coaches on the show. You're going to want to hear about her and what she does and all the offerings and service lines and things that she has. And so so happy to have Ann Papayotti with us today. Ann.
Thank you, Bruce. I'm happy to be with you.
Well, glad to have you. So, I must say that if you go to Ann's website, you'll see that she offers a full service coaching practice. Very impressive between coaching, individual coaching, speaking, online type of programming and coursework you have. As well as a book already published and another one on the way, I think, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So if you would just kind of, I guess, tell a little bit about yourself for our listeners and viewers. And then, you know, maybe from there, we can talk about some of the things that I know you and I have talked about pre-production that kind of, you said some of your techniques that I really liked. And I think that would be very instructive for folks to hear.
Sounds good. Well, I wasn't planning on becoming a coach. I guess this may be the place to start, Bruce. My life path, I always thought I'd be a teacher. And I guess I'm teaching in a different way. I'm just not in that fourth grade classroom standing at the chalkboard that was what I thought I would be. But, and then I went on through high school and college. And then a teacher suggested, you're really good at writing. Have you looked at journalism? And I thought, oh, that sounds kind of fun. And I realized that I really loved helping people tell their stories. And feature writing was just kind of my niche that I loved. And I actually changed my major. I started in business, actually. And teaching kept pulling me, but that was that kid's kind of dream. And I thought, business, I got to be able to make money. This is what I'm going to do. But I got pulled into that journalism sidebar. And I realized the power of the question in helping someone reveal their truth and share their story. So I was a journalism major, but then I thought, I need to see the world before I get a real job. And I became a flight attendant. And when I looked back in my childhood storybook about what I wanted to be when I grew up, 1 year, it was teacher, 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 nurse, stewardess. And how I knew what that was, I'll never know because I didn't fly until I was in my 20s. And then back to teacher. But I did go work for an airline and saw the world because I'd never been west of the Mississippi River or north of, I believe, Kentucky until I did take that first flight in college. But I did that for a couple of years and then realized I can have a career at the airline. And I did that. And I moved up and I became a teacher, went into training facilitation, and then ventured into other areas of the airline, kind of working my way up, and had a 17-year corporate career.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was during that time that, you know, just growing up and in life, that I recognized that life has a way of pulling us under.
Yep.
And I went through my own divorce. And this was not the first emotional trauma I had, but it was the first one where I actually sought help. And I went to a support group. And when I went through this support group as a participant, they recognized my professional skill set in helping others, and they asked me to take over. And when I did that, and that's some 25 years ago now, I began leading support groups for separation divorce, found people wanted more from me, asking for that one-on-one time. Mm-hmm. I kept resisting it. I was still at the airline there for a while. Mm-hmm. And then when my life opened up yet another path after I remarried, moved to Canada, gave up that 17-year career, and kind of reinvented myself, that's when I actually moved into coaching. And of course, naturally, what led into into that line of work for me were people going through losses and transitions. So,
wow. Okay.
Started.
That's so when did that, how long ago did that full-time coaching occur? How many years is it? Have you been pretty well full-time in the coaching space?
Yeah. So I actually became certified just in 2015. Mm-hmm. So that pull was, I was leading support groups, like I said, for now 25 years. I kept resisting spending the one-on-one time. I was doing it. I was sitting in coffee shops and right. going to lunches, and I didn't feel qualified, certified. I was helping right. people find other people to help them beyond where I was at. But they're like, you know what? You're the one that's helping me. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I went to a nonprofit organization that I was working at for serving in the support group space. And I was then creating content for personal development courses as well and giving those. And I said, you know, how do you feel about me going back to school and getting some certifications to better serve your audience? And they said, don't do it for us, but if you want to do it for yourself. And then I realized I really was doing it for me because I valued education and I wanted that. So I actually looked at becoming a therapist, and I'd heard about coaching, but I didn't know a lot about it. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed a few and I talked to them, and I found that coaching was really what I was doing, and I needed more tools. Therapy was going to take me longer, and I don't know that I could serve in the way I was in best in that. But it was really calling me because it just felt more, I don't know, legit. The coaching thing was still a little something. I wasn't sure. It sounded a little like, really? That's a thing? So it took me a minute to embrace it fully. And it was 4 years after I first looked at it, Bruce, before what? I finally jumped in all in and did it.
No, I think that's great. I mean, my path was a little different. I was trained as a psychologist and counselor and those things. And then once I had retired from my Justice Department career, was doing work for Deloitte and other financial service companies. And they said, oh, you got to become a coach. This whole, we admire your clinical background, but it's really going to start a lot of way for us to label you as a coach. So I did, based on their very strong recommendation, which is, went got the CPC credential. Now that agencies change it to a CLC credential. So I did that. I want to talk about your credentials, because it's like, you're way over credentialed, in my opinion. So might as well just spend 1 second talking about your different certifications and stuff.
Yes. Okay. As I said, I value education, so I like to keep learning. So I wanted to best serve the people that kept coming into my fold, so to speak. So I first went for my CPC, and then the more hours I got with coaching, then I, under the IDF, I became PCC level, you know, the professional certified coach under the International Coach Federation. So I think the next one's MCC. I'll go for that one soon. But then the next training I wanted was the neurolinguistics programming. And I just found that fascinating. I'm kind of a neuro nerd, Bruce. Truly, I think I'm a neuroscience fangirl. Like, I geek out over that stuff because I had a son. You've met my son, Chris, and he was diagnosed with epilepsy at the age of 3. And I learned a lot more about neuroscience and the brain than I ever intended to. But I really do just get excited about our ability to create new neural pathways. And so really kind of geek out over that. And so neurolinguistics programming was a certification I went for that I try to use in my practice. And then fitness certifications became important to me. And this was really just a strategy for my own success, Bruce. I love Zumba. Okay. It's dance fitness. Dance is just a joy of mine. And sure. I'd lost that in life. You know, after you got it. And I couldn't adult. And then I found out, oh, there's dance fitness classes for adults called Zumba. And I started doing that when I was in. Found that after I started, before I was coaching, but I was doing personal development and I was doing support groups, that I would miss my classes because the phone would ring or the email and it was someone you know, needed me, or the dryer would buzz, or the school would call. And I said, and I hate to be late because time's another value for me on time. So I was like, how can I do this? Well, teach it. If I'm the teacher, I'm accountable to other people. I'll show up. I'll be on time. I'll do it. I'll get my fitness in. And so I now have several fitness certifications.
Oh, wow.
But I also found that, Bruce, not only teaching it, that's also where I meet a lot of people who are looking to make, you know, positive life changes. And then they find out what else I do. And then they become another sort of pipeline into my business because they're looking for holistic life changes, but they're starting somewhere, or they've started somewhere else. But then anyway, it's sort of an amazing kind of full circle thing in my life. I think there's other certifications too. I don't remember what they are, but I look at life holistically, no matter what somebody comes to me for. So everything I've done sort of comes back together.
Beautiful. Well said. Well said. I actually have a distant relative that's very involved with Richard Bandler and Grinder, and I received training from them in early 80s. So, awesome. Yeah, I know. Every time I see Tony Robbins, I think, oh my God, he's ripping them off. But anyhow, with some of these the parlor side of that. But how do you? And I think that's good because there's not a whole lot of NLP, you know, people in the space per se. So talk a little bit about how you might utilize NLP informed techniques in your coaching.
I really use it mostly for the language and the reprogramming of and helping people the way they speak to themselves and bringing awareness. There will be occasional times where I might use an actual technique to help someone break a pattern, but for the most part, I'm going to use the language myself to help them create that awareness and then help them. And what happens is they'll start mirroring, right? And they'll create a new pattern for themselves. But there's occasion when we'll do some of the techniques to help them kind of find agreement and find that they're actually saying the same thing in a different way to make them have that awareness of what they truly, truly want. Because I find a lot of people don't know what they want, or they think they don't, until we will use a technique and help them find that congruency.
Right. Great. I think you want to have that congruency. And that's also the gestalt folks like to get.
Yes.
That congruency. that's another, oh man, whoo, taking me back to my training here. Fritz Perls and Eslon and all that good stuff. So I like to kind of from there, talk about some of the things you kind of established, you know, okay, wow, experience, life experience, credential, especially training. What are some things that you think are unique about you, your techniques or your practice, let's say? So I'll give you you can go from the atom level to the more global 10,000 feet level. So what are some things about you and what you're doing that really kind of differentiate you in the space from maybe somebody else?
And you know, I don't know that there's any technique that's unique by any means, but I certainly, again, going back to the journalism and the power of the question. And when I look back at my life and I think about becoming a coach, I recognize I was always becoming. And the natural intuitive listening. And I recognize that I'm also a bit of an intuitive empath. And I don't say that to scare people off or to woo them, but I do ground myself and I try to almost meditate on whom I'm about to meet and or speak with. And I listen, not just to them, but for what I need to pay attention to for them. And sometimes I get some clarity. So I call them downloads from the universe, if you will, that will maybe guide me a little bit in what's not being said by them, or a question that I might not just pick up on immediately, but I've learned to trust myself with that. And it's really paid off for me. But that took a long time to recognize that this is something I had as a kid. People told me this, you know, in high school, I was like the best listener, you know, so right. Friends came to me and they said, oh, she's such a good listener. You know, Anne's the one to talk to about this. Mm-hmm. It's not that I gave advice. It's that they got their clarity from talking to me and listening. And again, this power of asking questions to help people reveal their truth and their story. And people hear their truth, I find, Bruce, when they speak it. And so sometimes until they well, for the notes and time, then sometimes they allow themselves to kind of reveal. And then if we can reflect that back and maybe challenge it a little bit, mm-hmm. they go, yeah, oh yeah. And then it starts becoming a place where they can find healing just because they're finally facing their truth. So I think that's perhaps one thing is that I use my intuition because I trust it. And that often opens doors that might not have opened instead of trying to be very, and trust me, I'm very anal, which is something I struggle with because I'm very much, you know, got to do it this way by the book. That's why I, you know, education was always important. I didn't want to coach until I got this certification, even though I didn't have to, but I wanted this, this, and this. So I kind of battle between that, but to just be in flow, be present with them, and allow it to come out. I truly try to meet them where they're at. People expected, uninvited, undesirable, or something's got to change. And it's they're unhappy, unwell, unfulfilled. And it's really those two life paths that bring them to me. And then we go from there. So, you know, and we'll go and whatever they come to me for in that moment, that's mm-hmm. not the only thing we end up working on. That's going to be the immediate survival thing. And then we got to move through whatever that is, being able to grieve it, accept it, then find out what they're really stuck in, which will be some kind of emotion, some kind of pain. And that's not necessarily from this event that they're coming to me for. That's from the past. So we have to look back to understand. And this is where I want to know, have they been to therapy before? Have they dealt with that past thing? And if not, is it something that we can just visit, understand, and move forward? Or do I need to also work in conjunction with a therapist, send them back to therapy, and come back to me in a year or two if they can't take the action that we're going to work on together as a coach? And I'm sure you can relate to that better than anybody yep. being a therapist right. and a coach.
I do some of the EMDR, get, you know, work through the trauma history, send them back to the coach and, you know, kind of get through that trauma that was kind of the fuel for some of the things that got them into coaching. You get down there and there's, you know, certain varieties of trauma and then treat that and send them back. So you're spot on with that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's good. Cause it sounds like you're very mindful of that a lot of coaches make the dreadful mistake of trying to be a therapist, and that can be very bad for everybody. And so you pick up a ball you can't handle. And if you drop it, it's a bad ball to drop for mm-hmm. certain types of trauma and personality disorders and whatever else, and get some bad situations. So
absolutely
involved in as a sweep, as a dustpan and a broom for a couple of folks that have really, you know, they took something on. That person was actively suicidal, floridly psychotic, bipolar one for days, had been up for 6 days and thought, oh, well, they just have a lot of negative self-talk, completely missed, you know, the psychopathology involved and anywho, but that's yeah. my practice is the, you know, the last, there's a guy who calls me the last house on the street. So anyway, I'll take it. You know, I think, you know, water seeks its own level. Right. And so it's kind of fun. So given what you've said, one of the hallmarks that we're taught as coaches, as life coaches in our IFC and PCC and all our training, you know, good coaches ask good questions, but at the same time, as coaches, we help our clients deal with negative self-talk or self-limiting beliefs. And so I wanted to hear from you some some ways that you might assist your clients with those negative self-talk or self-limiting beliefs?
You know, that self-sabotage is just a bear, isn't it? So one thing that I'll do is I'll have them maybe, they have to develop awareness around it first and foremost. So you got to develop awareness before you can master it. So I'm just thinking of, have a C-suite executive that I coach, and he had been really, really worrying about presenting to the board of trustees. So we got down, so he's losing sleep over it and all this. So what's, you know, what's this negative self-talk about? So when he brought it out to the open, it was about a previous presentation he had done that he was very disappointed in himself about.
Okay.
So there's a lot of disappointment, regret. And so he's ruminating over that. So I said, okay, stop there. There's the thought. Okay. Now, what did you learn from that presentation that you wanted to do differently? He said, you know, that I didn't prepare well enough, that I needed to have spent a little more time on this and this, and that I needed to, you know, breathe. I needed to slow down. So write all that down. Okay. So now how can we take that thought and make it a useful thought? This thought about being disappointed. So the useful thought is this, it's a reminder to prepare, the ruminating negative to breathe, to maybe, you know, not drink 3 cups of coffee before you go in there, to maybe have a glass of water. So let's write all that down. Let's turn this negative bear into something that's useful and positive. Now we can shut that down, because all of that added up, all that rumination, rewind, replay, toss and turn at night added up to what? Reduced energy, stress, ongoing anxiety, AKA self-sabotage. So that would be something I would have someone do. Write down, what's the thought? What's the lesson learned from the thought that keeps, it's coming back because it's a messenger. What's the message? Now, what's the useful takeaway from that message? Let's take something positive. Let's use it. Okay, that's a reminder. We wanted less coffee, more water, and we want preparation. Done. We don't need that message reminder anymore. We don't need it. That's just one, but you can't imagine. It's awareness and then mastery for negative self-talk.
Okay. Good point. Yeah. And getting on the awareness, having some very clear, I clarify that to the nth degree, what that message is or what have you, you know, they only get this idea, you know, sometimes with like generalized anxiety disorder. Anxiety is the same thing as fear, but fear, you have a target. Anxiety, there is no target, right? There is this kind of, it's a fear response, but it may have a more diffuse, right? Cause behind it. So when people talk about anxiety, and it's really, like I said, trying to get as much information about what's causing that anxiety as possible is always a really good thing. So a lot of your work, well, there's grief and loss, it sounds like, and then a lot of relationship work. So let's talk about the grief and loss side of that, if you would, and tell me what you've been doing there.
So grief, you know, there can be loss of a job, loss of a relationship, and that can come as death or divorce, right? And so regardless, the grief is the same. So everybody's going to go through that process. And the first thing that I want them to understand is it's not an event. There's no start time and end time. And people are often comparing themselves to someone else's process, their timing, or they're not. I got a text from someone yesterday. I actually lost 2 friends in the last 2 weeks. Oh. And it's, you know, so just, I'm surrounded with a lot of grief and a lot of friends who are grieving. And I got a text from one of them yesterday, one of a colleague, a friend, who's saying, I saw this on social media. Can you believe they're posting like this while they move on fast? And I'm like, okay, you know, let's not interpret, misinterpret, assume, judge. Let's step back for a moment and recognize, you know, some people, they may not even, anyway, we got to step back and and not judge, compare, and all of those things that we tend to do as human beings. Because if that were us and it was our family, would we be doing what this family's doing? So, but that shock, denial, anger, sadness, bargaining, peace, acceptance thing, right, Bruce, is not linear.
Right.
And what I learned, and I lost a child, is that it's more like the rinse cycle in the washing machine, and that it speeds up, it slows down. And just when you think it's done, it speeds up again. And then it slings you to that side and that side. And then, and so I recognize that for people, and that, you know, then all of a sudden it's done and you say, okay, I've arrived. I've met peace, acceptance. And you, somebody opens that door, and then you're the sock that's stuck in the gasket. Somebody closes the door and they press start again. And you're like, here we go for the ride. And so the things that trigger, so we have to learn how to deal with grief triggers also. So when I work with somebody through grief, first it's surviving the loss. And it's understanding that this is a process. And it's helping them understand those different places in the process, what to expect maybe, mm-hmm. how to self-accept, self-love. I think all healing starts with kindness. They have to extend that to themselves, to others. So I tried to sort of coach my friend through this last night to extend the kindness to herself and to others as they're grieving differently. And then to know then how to manage triggers that will come as they go through this varying time period. And then also how to cooperate with time. Because time is, I think, a great, great healer, but I find people don't always cooperate with time and they don't let those wounds become scars. Mm-hmm. And so, and there's different reasons for that. And you know better than I would as a therapist, but I, from my personal losses and experiences, I think one is we're scared we'll forget and that that's somehow dishonoring someone we loved, or sometimes it's, people get stuck in victim mode because that becomes their identity. You know, I can safely say, and the family would agree, my mother-in-law is one of those. And there's just different reasons for that. But to understand grief is very important to me for my clients. And I do group work with this often, and you'll see the differences. And even in my separation divorce support groups, often there'll be someone who's waited years to come seek support. Years,
right?
Before they, that's why the importance of facing the reality of our situation, because we can't change what we're not willing to face. And so, 7 years, one lady in my current group, 11 for another. Others, you know, it's happening in the moment. They're going through it right now. They just, you know, it's not even the divorce isn't, papers haven't even been signed. They're seeking help now. So that's how different and how it can span for people, but. That's grief and loss in a nutshell for how I work with people, is to get them first through that survival before you can take them to strive, because strives work. They're not ready to work, right? They're making positive change in their lives. And some people, for me, Bruce, I may see them in that survival mode and get them through that. And they may not, I may see them again in a couple years when now they're ready to come. Now they're ready to do work and clear the path to move forward into what I call them thriving and really enjoying the sunshine of life again. But it's sometimes there's a gap in time, depending on where they were when I met.
The end point is thriving. Then before that was striving. And then what was before?
Survive.
Yes.
Then strive. So, because if they don't survive, nothing else matters, right? Then strive. Now here's the work. Now here's the coaching. This is if they don't, this is where I have to make a decision whether to send them to therapy or not.
That's a hierarchy of
yes. And this is where I see, can, are they showing up? Are they able to, you know, if I give them a couple sessions to see, you know, because we got to talk about what got in the way, what are the obstacles, what this
there
is where I, whether I'm the right person, whether coaching's the right modality.
All right.
Or not. And then then we move into thriving, and that's where we can, you know.
Yeah. And you know, and you'll know this, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, where I'll have affiliate people around town, right, and say, oh, I know this person and they have this child or whatever, you know what I mean? And I don't know, you know, they really haven't worked out with a lot of therapists. I said, well, the good news is with me, I'm very polarizing. You either like me or it's the other way around. It's not like you either like me or hate me, pretty much. From the consumer standpoint, not so much the pro. Yeah, so either you like me or you hate me, but you know, and so it's always fun to see that, you know, that transformation take place and that relationship, you know, that alliance, that almost therapeutic alliance build up. It's just real fun when you don't necessarily expect that to come easy, and it actually comes, you know. And I think the older I get, that it's a little bit more of a effortful process with the younger clients, you know. Anyway, oh boy. Okay, so I have another thing for you to explain. So I'm gonna put you on the spot here. You and I were talking pre-production about this proposal thingy that you offer as an exercise in one of your offerings. So if you would, that was really striking to me. It sounded almost paradoxical. So talk about that if you feel comfortable.
The proposal. Okay, refresh me a little bit.
I think it was like maybe in the separation divorce counseling or something.
Oh, that, yes. Okay. So, sorry. Yes. So I had the beautiful experience of assisting a client plan his proposal of marriage. So I also do couples relationships. So I do, like you said, I do grief and loss. I also do relationships. So it's usually conflict. I help people break up or make up. But there's a lot more breaking up than making up in my work. So, and divorce, I can tell you, even after divorce, a lot of times people, they get the business of divorce done, but they don't know how to break up. Mm. And they're stuck in the emotion of the relationship, and they're stuck in victim or anger or something. There's something going on. And like these, like I said, there's two people, 7 years, 11 years, they were divorced. They hadn't broken up. Okay. So when I say I have to help people break up, sometimes I've only got one of the couple, one's moved on, one's never broken up. So that kind of work I'm here to say, but sometimes I get the couple and they're having relationship conflict and they want to work on making up. I would love to get some couples that want to come and break up in a healthy way together, but that just hasn't happened in my practice, but I know it's possible. Okay. Just because that would be ideal for the kids as I see it. But this one particular couple I've been working with since last fall, and there's a lot of trauma from the past for the woman, and she's been in therapy for years and years and years. So really for him, there was a lot of communication issues, understand when she's triggered, how to be there for her, how to, you know, it's a lot of that. And so it's not taken personally. And so it's not escalated. And for her to understand that he's not her ex and he's not her past, and that for them to communicate, and they had to make a decision. Are they going to stick it out? Are they going to ride this ride? Because it's not easy.
Right.
And they've really been doing well the last few months. And I see them separately. Then I see them together like once a month. And they've been doing really, really well. And he asked, I'm sorry.
Are they working it out or are they splitting up?
They're working it out. And he asked me, he struggles, one of her relationship struggles with him is that he's not super romantic.
Oh no.
And he asked me if I could help him plan his proposal of marriage.
Wow.
So that was an exciting kind of thing. So I had to coach him into, because I don't want to just tell him, do this, you know, that's not coaching, right? So I coached him through how to be romantic, you know, what that would mean for her, how that could look for him. And ultimately he proposed 2 weeks ago and she said yes. So that's just one of those coaching victory stories that I just love. So yeah, I see them Wednesday night, tomorrow night this week together for the first time since the proposal. I'm excited.
Well, that's just great. And that I thought that was pretty interesting, the proposal and sounds like a good thing to do. Obviously it was very much in line with what was going on in the process of this couple, but certainly as an intervention, it was pretty good too. I was almost thinking as a paradoxical intervention, like, okay, they're getting divorced anyway. But sorry, that's why I was like, oh, wow, wait a minute.
When you said proposal, I was picturing paperwork, like, you know, I don't know. And then I was like, oh, the ring, the proposal. Yeah.
Oh, but anyway, no, it's still a marvelous technique. And man, I don't want to say victory, but what a great thing that couple really is through your coaching, getting to the place that they probably couldn't have gotten to on their own, or it would have taken years, years and years and years and years and trial and error and trial and error and heartache without a third party such as yourself. Yeah. I think that's marvelous.
Because you know, so many couples have, you know, we know divorce have irreconcilable differences, mm-hmm. resistance that are not deal breaker values. And that was something this couple had identified. They were equally yoked, as we say, you know, in what mattered most. But there was a lot of these just misunderstandings, miscommunications, just miss that would create these blocks, which when this particular couple required, I combine education, Bruce, if that's what I believe will help them and if they're open to it. So I use something called the Principles of Energy Leadership. That's another certification I have. I just thought, anyway, and energy leadership is something, and it's a model. Some people need visuals and they need something they can hold on to. And it gave them a common language, and as well as me, to use for the three of us to talk about. I was so level one when this happened, but I was able to shift to level three by doing this. So it was awareness of what thought created what emotion dictated what behavior. And it's just, it's a model created by Bruce Schneider, the founder of the coaching school I attended, IPEC. And it's just a beautiful visual that's easy and people remember it. Seven levels of energy, two types, you know, positive, negative, catabolic, anabolic, and people can remember that and they think shift. And if they're car people, then I'm like, you know, you got seven gears in your car and you're driving around in one or two all day long, you're going to burn the engine out. So where are you and where do you want to be? And it's not about not going there. We all downshift. We get something victimizes us. Something makes us angry. It's about not staying there and burning the engine out. So, or you need to climb this mountain in front of you. You need to downshift. You know, maybe you need to get a little mad to get that done. So go down to two. But when you get up there, you realize you've conquered it. Don't stay mad. Let's go now. Where do we need to be to cruise? We're at the top here. So I'll use the kind of language that works and fits for the client based on who they are and where they're at. But I love that model for that reason. People grasp it. There's a visual for it. They see it.
So I like that for anger management. Mm. That just strikes me that I could use something like that for my anger management work, not for my own, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm actualized with anger, but I'm just kidding. I might want to look into that for as a framework in anger management, because especially for men, it's like level one, two, three, and I was going to, you know. Anyway, sorry, I digress. Now,
I think it's great for that. I love it. People, and then I help people use it for like their kids. I say you can use it in reverse and observe, and you can say, all right, I see you or I hear you doing this. Go backwards. What were you feeling that led to that behavior?
Exactly.
Well, what thought did you have that created that feeling? And often it's not what we're thinking, and we're assigning meaning to what we would be thinking or feeling if we were doing that, just like my friend with the text about the grieving. And we could be totally wrong. And often we are.
Well, yeah. I want to be a good steward of our time. And I want to hear about your book. I mean,
oh, thank you.
Tell us about your book. Oh, my gosh. It's just, can't wait.
Well, thank you.
Tell our listeners and everybody what's going on.
Well, it's The Gift of Shift. It's behind me on my bookcase there. The Gift of Shift with the box with the bow on it.
Great title. As a man, I identify as a man. But as a man, you know, I could even be like, oh, yeah, it just makes sense. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I love hearing that. So it's about the power of perspective. So I was just talking about shifting. You know, you've got 7 years to shift. It's like shift. Recognize that we can't always change our circumstances, but we can change how we experience them just by changing how we look at it. So Tracy McDonald, my co-author, and I, again, recognizing the power of the personal story, we shared 12 personal stories, sometimes intimate.
Nice.
I had to go a little vulnerable there. But we did. What's that?
Does it have like a little workbook to follow in each story or something?
Yeah. So there's coaching questions. So after each short story, because we know from clients, often self-help books become too academic and overwhelming and people buy them and then they stick them on a shelf and they don't finish them and they don't know how to apply them. So we have 12 short stories, again, short, and each one we show how we went from a powerless, negative way of thinking, feeling, being to shifting in the same circumstance without anything changing except the way we thought about it to a more powerful way of thinking, feeling, and being. So we illustrate in our own personal story behind each story, 5 coaching questions so that the reader can reflect on how this theme, because they're all common things. We've all been through betrayal. We've all had to find courage. We've all had to hold on to hope. We've all had to quiet that inner critic. We've all had to choose forgiveness or not, or choose ourselves over someone else. So all of these themes are common to life. Reader reflects through the 5 questions, and then there's a place for them to write their story. Here's the inspiration. Here's the place to choose change. If you want to choose a new perspective, the gift is yours to open. It's in you, but it's also up to you. That's the gift of shift.
Very well said. Awesome. And it's literally a refreshed version to me of this cognitive behavioral, you know, the Albert Ellis's and the Beck's, you know, like if you change the way, you know, if you change your beliefs, you change how you act and feel, you know, subsequent to that, the activating events, the triggers are going to be the triggers, but what can change is how you either perceive or believe about a situation. And then your reaction is different. I do a lot of that and on the anger management side and some other stuff. So no, I love y'all's approach to that. And you choose or not to do that. And the thing I always tell people is that you have free will. I mean, you have free will to make choices.
Yes.
A lot of people can talk about religious determinism and other types, but whoa. You have the free will to come in here or not come here. To, you know, the guy who comes into this office, as you've seen, and they sit on I have a huge couch, and they talk about how they have no faith, but they did not inspect the legs of that 1,000-pound couch. You know? Like, you got faith, brother. And you didn't look underneath. Okay. These are fun examples, you know, that kind of catch people looking at the third. I've made a career out of these types of things. But anyway, I mean, that is true, you know. And so that you are showing faith in that moment when you sit down on my couch. I wouldn't say that. I have 2 new chairs, and the older chairs, you could have. It was a 50-50 chance there, but I did upgrade to some. The furniture is extremely heavy. Anyway, so I love that. That sounds so great. I like the fact the stories were short and that people can rewrite that in another way should that apply to them. I think that is marvelous. Prior co-host of this show is now has his coaching practice, but he published a book of letters that he had written while he was in recovery and treatment to his family. And then And so then the recipients of the letters, you know, talked about their reactions and stuff like this. So it was really good. You had the sender, the receivers, and it's all cataloged in a book of the journey of recovery. And, it, you know, it's a, that's such a good format, and it's so logical, and yeah, it's easy to embrace. So, all right. So we have 3 minutes. So is there any, well, first of all, before let's just get out, how can people find you? How can they reach you, access you, your social media? I mean, please just, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, please lay them all out for our folks.
So my website is Skyview Coaching. So looking up, you have to look up to get out of that negative place. So skyviewcoaching.com. You can find me also on Facebook. My page is Skyview Coaching. And you're laughing. You're cracking me up.
That was a knockout punch.
Okay, good. I like those knockout punches. And then Instagram is Ann Papayoti. That I married a Greek, so you'll have to get the spelling from the show notes. And then of Instagram, Ann Papayoti. What else is Ann Papayoti? Anyway, there it is on the screen. P-A-T-I. Papayoti, I think. I'm not huge on social media. I do a lot of just referral marketing, but I need to do more of that. I'm getting there. But the Gift of Shift, coaches like it because it gives them coaching questions and helps people with their clients because of those things, those common themes in life. So it's on Amazon. It's on all your online booksellers. You can get it, Barnes and Noble, et cetera. Or just if you want to support your local bookstore, they can order it from their Ingram Sparks catalog. And I really appreciate your having me on the show, Bruce. It's fun talking to you.
To the punch there. Hey, it's a pleasure having you on the show. So it's so fun to, you know, hear what other coaches are doing. And, you know, go to the Skyview Coaching. Yes. Is
that right? Yes.
Yeah. Go to her. It's just very well done. Very comprehensive. Nice job on the site. Just don't unturned. It's just perfect. You know, it's just such a good site. So I enjoyed reading it and seeing all the things you have to offer. And it's just so wonderfully and tastefully done and just matches everything else. So good, good, good. So yeah, folks, check Ann out and you do stuff by Zoom and stuff like that.
I do a lot by Zoom, obviously, like most of us these days, but I was in Montreal 14 years before moving to Dallas in 2019. So it was all live there. And then of course, I had a few clients on Zoom spread out across the country. Now pretty much everything's on Zoom, but I'm starting to travel more, do some live events. I do speaking, do workshops, that kind of thing. So, I'm around. I'd love to hear from people. I do some coach mentoring too. Okay. So coaches are looking for that. Come on. I'd love to hear from you.
Well, awesome. Well, again, thanks for coming on the show today. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you on again here in 6 months or so and get an update of what's going on. Or when your new book comes out and talk more about speaking. I know on your classes, you have your shift class there's a lot of things we didn't cover with you that we can do next time. So let me just wrap it up. So, wow, what another great episode of the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Again, you can see us on Apple Podcasts or hear us on Apple Podcasts, all iHeartMedia. And of course, we're archived on the LA Talk Radio show. We have a Facebook at Concierge Coaches Show. Our Instagram is Concierge_coaches. And my website, the little website that good, is conciergecoach.net. Otherwise, bid everybody a farewell. Have a great week. Thanks for coming on, Ann. And we'll see everybody here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. See y'all later, everybody. Bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.